Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, friend of the show, joining us now live via satellite. Where are you, John Wilner, right now? Where are you?
In the bedroom, where the reception is actually pretty good.
Do you have a place in your house where you tend to get better reception? Because I do the same thing. I go to one corner of the house, I sit in the corner, and I never drop a call there.
Well, the best place is actually the bathroom, but it's occupied right now.
I love it. Yesterday, the Pac-12 launched their webinar number one. I hate the word webinar, by the way. It should be more like video conference one or something like that. But David Shaw on the call, along with Nick Rolovich, along with Mr. Clay Helton at USC. Big takeaway, 11-game schedule. What do you think of it?
You know, I think it's one of probably 8 or 10 options that they're thinking of. I mean, really, we shouldn't be surprised at anything that is said, because they have to have every logical and illogical option under consideration at this point. You know, I had not heard 11-game conference-only schedule. I've certainly heard conference-only schedule with 9 or 10 games in case they're not quite ready to start in early September. I've heard a plus one, nine conference games and one of your three non-conference games. I've heard a plus one where that non-conference game would be a new one, like Oregon would scrap Ohio State and they'd just schedule Wyoming instead, right? Because it's better logistically. So everything is on the table. We hadn't heard that, but it shouldn't be surprising that they're thinking about just going 11 conference.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News with us. Yeah, you had Nick Rolovich kind of playing the role of, I'm just trying to see if we could, you know, how many games, I want to coach some games, how many games are we going to play? I thought you had David Shaw and Mr. Clay Helton a little bit more, being a little more thoughtful with sort of the reality of this, and maybe that just comes with comfort within the league. But what is this incumbent upon? Do students have to be on campus? Is there a way that they play conference games with maybe USC and some of the higher density population places aren't hosting? What else is on the table?
Well, I mean, everything is on the table, but it all is going to start with the presidents and chancellors making decisions about the campus at large. I do not see any way that a Pac-12 school is going to say, all right, football, you go practice. You all are welcome on campus. You start practicing and lifting and getting ready for the game, but the rest of campus is closed. Students aren't allowed to go to class. They're not allowed in dorms. We're not going to see that. There has to be some level of open campus in order for football and other athletes to be allowed on there to practice and compete. But the question is, how are you going to define an open campus, right? I mean, it is clearly not going to be business as usual, but it could very well be a deal where dorms are half full, where there's no big lectures. The only in-person academic work is, you know, either lab work or very small classrooms. So there's a lot of leeway in terms of what is going to define an open campus. But certainly, if there's zero students on campus, there's zero football.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, Bay Area News Group. Winners and losers. If it comes to, you know, the idea of playing an 11-game schedule, who immediately jumps to the front of the line as, hey, this is a win for, is it good for Oregon? Is it good for Oregon State? Like, who are the winners and losers in your mind in a scenario like that?
Well, I don't have all the non-conference schedules, at the top of my head, but I think it would depend on your definition of winning and losing. If it's job survival, Clay Helton probably comes out ahead because he doesn't have to play Alabama or Notre Dame. If it is making the playoff, then that's also a different calculation, right? I think that could hurt. If you think Oregon's got a good shot to win that game, then missing Ohio State could hurt Oregon's chance to get to the playoff. So it kind of depends. If you're Oregon State, you know, and you don't have to go to Oklahoma State, that may help you get closer to six wins in a bowl berth. So I think it probably would depend on how you're defining victory. But, you know, certainly an Oregon win over Ohio State followed by a Pac-12 championship would put the Ducks in a great position for the playoff.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News with us. Do you think Oregon's that close? I kind of feel like they would be in the conversation, top 10 team, but I think they're probably a year away, maybe a quarterback away from really being a team that could beat Ohio State and really rattle around a possible playoff. But maybe I've just seen too much.
Well, I kind of agree with you. I think that the combination of a new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, and new offensive line, except for left tackle, that's a tough combination, you know, to navigate through a difficult schedule and put yourself in position for the playoff in any season. But then you factor in what they're missing in terms of continuity on offense with the lack of spring practice, the lack of the offseason workouts of 7-on-7. I mean, I think that, you know, the way this situation has unfolded, it's an advantage to teams that have, you know, play caller and veteran quarterback. And Ohio State would have that, and Oregon would not.
I also look at sort of the idea that, you know, I'm looking at Los Angeles County. They have a much higher infection rate per 100,000 residents versus maybe Pullman, Washington or Corvallis. Could you foresee a situation in which USC doesn't get a home game, or even if they're playing within the conference, they have to be real selective about where those games are being played? Or do you think all of that is also on the table?
Yeah, I think it's all on the table. I mean, L.A. County, the L.A. Times had a story this morning that said L.A. County may have 3 more months, or is expected to have 3 more months of shelter in place. So it is wildly different from, you know, campus to campus, region to region, state to state. I mean, could the L.A. schools go play in Vegas, or could they play in, you know, any home game gets transferred to Phoenix if say, Arizona is open and welcoming? I mean, who knows? There's so much that still has to play out, and that's what the commissioners and the athletic directors are counting on, is that we know a whole lot more in 2 months than we do now. And 2 months from now, you know, there's not even time to report for training camp. They're just hoping that a lot of things unfold that provides clarity on all this over the rest of May and through June, because they don't really need to decide whether kids are going to show up for training camp until late June, early July. The one thing that needs to be decided soon is whether the campuses will be open generally for faculty and students. And, you know, I didn't mention this earlier, but one of the key decisions or key factors is the health of the faculty, right? Because a lot of faculty members are 60 and older, and we've all seen, you know, the hospitalization and mortality rates for the older population with this, and figuring out ways for the campuses to protect the faculty is going to be a big part of the calculation for whether they are open for business come whatever it is, you know, late August for the semester schools.
John Wilner, I appreciate you. It's valuable stuff. How do you think this ends? I know I'm asking you to get a crystal ball out, but is a season taking place in September? Is it pushed back? In the Wilner household, what's the prevailing opinion?
You know, it has switched basically every week. There's a different prevailing opinion. At this point, I really think that they're going to try to play in September. But I think that the best bet might be that there's no conference games and they basically start up in late September, early October. But, you know, then the question is, can they get finished in time, right? Or are they going to have to pause for a few months and maybe start back up in January or February if there's a vaccine? And the other thing is, you know, that the coaches and the ADs and the presidents are counting on is the testing is such a huge factor in the campus life and athletics, having enough tests, having the tracing capability, all that kind of stuff. And that's part of why they're waiting to see how things play out, because if testing ramps up dramatically in the next 2 months, you know, that gives us a much better chance of having a football season.
John Wilner, you're the best. I'll let you get back to your life. Thank you for making time for us.
Homeschooling the kids.
What are you working on right now?
My kids take Spanish immersion, and I don't speak Spanish. So you could bet how that's going.
Solamente en español, por favor.
Yes, whatever that means, yes.
I love it. Wilner, you're the best. I appreciate you, man. I feel his pain. I got to be honest. I was really proud of myself the other night, and the 17-year-old in our household was working on math, and she was working on sort of measuring the circumference of a circle, and here's the angle of a 90-degree angle that it's at the middle of this circle, and here's the radius, the length of the measurement of the radius, and what is the measurement of the arc. And I was really proud of myself that I figured some of that stuff out and then I could help her kind of navigate it, because I can remember being 16 or 17 and I was lost. I was thinking, man, I go back to high school in my 40s. I would not only be a stud athlete, I would be a star student. Well, I went to high school too early. That was the problem. I wasn't there. I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't mentally, like, my brain wasn't ready for it at all. But yeah. Could you imagine be like Teen Wolf out on the basketball court, except without the hop in my step? All right, leave it here. You got the BFT statewide. Hours coming up. I used to say that the 12 o'clock hour was my favorite hour of the radio show. Then I moved towards saying, oh, the 1 o'clock hour, it's got all the audio, it's a little more fast moving, because the 12 o'clock hour is me out of the gates like spitting fire. Then it's great guest, usually here's the formula right in the middle of it. Then we spin into the 1 o'clock hour. It's kind of like catch you up on everything that's going on in the world really fast, a lot of audio, fast moving, good guest in the middle of the hour. And then the 2 o'clock hour becomes a little less formal, less scripted. And in fact, in the last 5 or 6 weeks, it's been virtually unscripted. Anything is liable to happen in the 2 to 3 o'clock hour of this radio show. And that has held up. But I can't decide now, because I like each of those hours for different reasons. And I have scheduled them to be different specifically because I know that you come to expect that depending on when you tune in. Raise your hand if you're here for all 3 hours. Judah and Adriana put their hands up. See that? See, I like that. I raised my hand as well. I wonder how many of you are there for all 3 hours. I wonder. Sometimes I got an email yesterday from a guy who emailed me and said, great radio show. I happened to catch, and he like talked about a 6-minute segment of the show that I distinctly remember. And I answered him and thanked him for writing. But I also thought, gosh, what if I was off for those 6 minutes that he happened to tune in? I can't have a bad moment on this show. Simultaneously, I got a DM from a listener in Eugene who said they tuned in and I had gone dark on them. Dark meaning negative, meaning I wasn't being very hopeful or optimistic, meaning that I had abandoned my core principle for this radio show during this time, which was to be uplifting and encouraging. And I also got a text from a friend who said, gosh, you were really hard on Major League Baseball. Be hopeful there. Be hopeful that they're going to play the games. There's a fine line for me between being hopeful and being Pollyanna, though. I automatically think to myself, you know what? It's good to be hopeful. It's good to be hopeful. It's good to be encouraging. I get up every day, I'm hopeful. I don't have a sort of negative disposition. But if you tune in for the wrong 4 or 5 minutes of the show, maybe I could see you taking it that way. Like maybe each day we should have a meter on the wall that sort of goes like it would have like the spectrum. I don't think it would be rainbow because it's not really the message I want to convey on with the thing. But it would be more like of a dark to light sort of light that got brighter as the show went. You know what I mean? Like it would be like a halogen, like 1,000 watt, you can't hardly stand to look at it, high beams on the highway light when I'm like spitting my ultimate optimism. Hey, this is great. The Pac-12 conference. I like that they're planning this way. We're going to pull through this. Like it would be that light part. And then there might be a dark part where it gets a little dimmer when I go, you know what? The NBA should just bag the damn season. What are they trying to do? Then it would get a little dimmer when I go, Major League Baseball, the owners, oh, I get what they're doing here. The owners are putting this proposal out there just so it can get shot down by the Players Association. I could do that. Ultimately, I could do all that stuff. But in the end, I just wonder sometimes for the time that you tune in, sometimes, look, I try to make this show consistent. I pride myself on it. But I try to make it hopeful. But if you tune in for the wrong 90 seconds, you may not catch me at my best. That's a lot of pressure for me. Alabama Adriana, Judah, you know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, it's a very small window in a 3-hour, you know, show.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we've all been there trying to be at your best for 90 seconds. And off stuff.
Well, there you go. Your 90 seconds. Did you hammer it or no?
Oh, yeah, I hammered it.
You brought that home.
I brought it home.
What do you think? What do you guys think makes good radio? Like for this show, not good radio in general, but for this show. When is this show at its best in both of your opinions? I'm curious on your feedback.
For this show, I think it's when we're all talking about something funny and and all have a lot of high energy and all bring... yeah, just energy and laughs.
Like when we're talking about, what was the name of that club? The Dirty 30 or whatever that club's called that you get on the polls at?
Yeah, it's Dirty, yeah.
Yeah. Why is it just Dirty?
Don't ask me. I think that's terrible marketing. Just terrible.
Yeah, that's I have a negative. Like when I say the word dirty, that's not a positive connotation for me.
Well, it doesn't help that it is actually dirty. Like... That's the worst part.
Maybe they were looking around before opening their doors and they're like, what should we call this place? Like, can you imagine naming a baby like that? You know, it's like if you're in the wrong hospital, the baby would not have a happy name.
It's like naming your baby ugly.
No.
If it's ugly. Well, maybe
do you
not.
Think all do you think all babies are cute? I think
nope.
You don't?
That was a quick
Whoa.
Answer.
Nope.
You didn't wait long.
No,
that's
because I just know I've seen ugly babies, and that's honestly, if I could be 100% candid, I'm so afraid that I will have an ugly child one day and that no one will tell me.
I tell you.
Thank you.
All you have to do is, I probably couldn't hide it. Now that you've said it, I'll be looking for it. But I also think, like, I made this comment to a friend and he disagreed with me, furiously disagreed. I think all human beings, there's something attractive about everyone. And I'm not talking about physical attraction with all people, but I'm saying that I can find things about almost, like, name a person, I can find, probably find something that is an attractive quality that they have, you know?
Yeah. I would say, like, probably most people, but not all people.
I'm not talking about, like, serial killer, find something nice about, Ted Bundy. But I'm just saying, like, you give me a room full of people, I could probably go chair by chair and go, hey, you know what? She's really smart. Oh, this person really knows how to solve problems. Hey, this person right here has got a lot of resilience, been through a lot in his life, and man, he just keeps bulldozing along. And wow, look at this person, man, really tall and attractive. That's a strikingly good-looking person. Okay, that one's physical. Okay, then you go, I think you could find that about almost everyone on the planet.
Well, I think that's how most people, I think that's how we should look at each other, not trying to pick out the negatives. I think that's a really positive way to look at things.
Yeah, you could go around at the nursery at the hospital and be like, ooh, that's an ugly baby.
By the way, that's when I think this radio show's at its best, when we're calling out kids. And we're able to say, this one's ugly, this one's
ugly. We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.